Talking with Creators is finally back. It's Liam here with another episode. Today, I'll be speaking with Jamaica Gilmore and Roger Paul Mason, who were fantastic guests and also allowed an environment so friendly toward making a podcast. Their whole living room is a recording studio, an art studio. There are synthesizers on walls, on desks. I've never seen an analog synth, on a desk like they put it. And I don't even know how else to best explain it. Other than that, they have their living room as a studio. And it's quite inspiring to even see as a person who enjoys music, enjoys arts. And the fact that they are both happy with their environment and the ability to create for a living just makes me really excited to dig in. So without further ado, here we go.
All right, and we're on. So today I am making a podcast with Jamaica Gilmore and Roger Paul Mason, both artists in the Austin area. Welcome on, guys.
Hello.
So, I wanted to talk about what got you interested in, like, music as a kid. Like, what got you individually going in music? Or whether, what came first? Like, painting, art, stuff like that?
I was actually a painter and musician in the womb. No. I would say parents, dope-ass parents, and just general just being alone as a young child. Before my sister was born, I did a lot of spending time by myself, and painting was a big part of my activities and imagination.
My dad is a painter, and my mom is a costume designer, so growing up, creativity seemed like you better do it, because that's what mom and dad do. They do creative stuff all day. So we had very cool New York parents.
Yeah, so for me, I can relate to that because my parents were also creative too. My mom is a musician and does music herself, but it's important to nurture children, especially early on, to love art. I think it's special when parents allow their children the flexibility of exploring. Like, you know, I'm thankful that my parents never were like, oh, you listen to Black Flag? We're religious. We're taking that away. Bye.
I had friends that were almost excommunicated from their families for going to RISD, which is crazy because it's the best high school in the dang country, but it was a lot of beef.
Yeah. Going back to the, I don't know, you mentioned obviously that we're from New York, originally upstate New York to be specific. I think in addition to that, you know, your parents are very influential when you're very young and throughout your life, but also your teachers are very influential throughout your life when you're young. And having accessibility to art classes and music classes was also another great nurturing thing that our schools both provided. We actually went to the same school.
You know, in school, you'll probably get exposed to like bands or orchestra, something like that. That's probably my first exposure to music. I started playing like cello.
No way, me too.
Yeah, and like I only played for 1 year though.
Yeah, we actually did have the same art teacher, and she did save my life when I severed a big chunk out of my hand. And then later we did dance on a table in Paris together. So, and then I came into school one day and she just said, Mason, you're going to RISD. And I was like, what's RISD? And then like you can trace my entire life from that moment where you've got a good teacher and she just tells you what to do with yourself.
Education is important. Teachers are amazing.
Yes, and you're spot on about that. The thing is, like, the best teachers out there are the ones that are there when you least expect them to be there. And the ones who can make the biggest effect understand you. So when you first got into like music, what was it? Like, what are your earliest, both your earliest memories of like listening to actual stuff?
There's a part, the part of music that I love the most is when you hear something that's so great, it seems to stop time.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole void just changes. And I remember hearing that John Lennon track, solo Lennon track, was one of my earliest memories of like barely walking at that point.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, man, this is trippy. I didn't even have the words. Mm-hmm. But I remember hearing that in my living room as a little baby and be like, wow. And going forward in life, that's always the thing I reach to, whether I'm making a hardcore track or a techno track or a blues track. I want it to be so vibey that it touches you, moves your butt a little bit, and stops your frame of time. And then you want to hit the rewind button and you want to keep that feeling.
Recently, I had an experience as at like Target, and I know that sounds so anticlimactic.
I bought some wonderful Goldfellas.
It starts with that. No. I remember I was pulling into Target with my fiance, and this song, for you guys don't know me that well at all, I'm a Foo Fighters fan, big Foo Fighters fan, and I'm also, behind that, also a huge Beatles fan, and I know that Dave Grohl listened to a lot of the Beatles, and there's this one song on one of their albums called Ain't It the Life, and I just remember, like, listening to the song and just actually being blown away by how melodically sound the chord progression was and how his vocals actually kind of made me cry. I was like, getting emotional. I was like, it was this really mellow song, but also there's a certain combination that a good pop song has is the ability to be mellow, but also understand that there's a certain, sound that you're looking for in a song. What, as far as when you first started playing instruments, what got you started in creating a particular chord riff or particular song structure? What got you started and what exposed you to that first, guys?
I don't know if that's really the thing that like got me into music in terms of making my own music. I was going to go back to your initial question in regards to, no, it's that was like a really, it struck a real chord with me like initially when you said it, I was gonna say, yeah, I don't know, good pop music has, or sorry, good music, I think the music that's really compelling to me at least, has a combination of like pop, like a pop sensibility and mixed with like, you know, this weird experimentation and accidental weirdness that kind of happens. So it's like you're striving to make a pop song, but there ends up being like something quirky within it that makes it really like human, I guess, and really interesting in that regard.
Pixies.
But, yeah, exactly.
like Pixies.
Or like you said that you were into like the Foo Fighters and like, you know, Nirvana and like that whole grunge movement.
Yeah.
Like Nirvana really, like they were making pop songs, but they had a grunge sensibility, which was rare in the pop world at that time.
So one of the first articles I can remember reading about songwriting, it was a teeny little blurb in Guitar Player by Frank Black, and he said that he likes to write songs that are square and then cut off a corner.
Yeah.
Now, when you think, if you've ever learned any of their songs, it's progressions of three a lot of the time.
So it's loud, quiet, loud, usually.
Yeah, lots of dynamic, for sure.
But which it's weird if you listen to the, like, there, Where Is My Mind? It's pretty sudden. Yeah. It's that's the beginning of the song. It's an actual thud of a high frequency vocal.
When you have a loud, quiet, loud dynamic, it makes the loud parts seem really super fucking loud.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to turn down the whole song the whole time to listen to it. So
back to the time stoppage thing, when I was in seventh grade and I heard that song for the first time, time literally stopped. Mm-hmm. That's one of my moments. Mm-hmm. Of my entire life, and I remember being wet from my friend's pool, and I just kept hitting rewind. Right. What the fuck is this song? I need to hear this all the time.
My parents, my mom in particular, was super into amazing music from the point of me being born. So I remember being raised with Kate Bush and XTC and Bob Marley and all this music that was so different and interesting and kind of, I guess, alternative would be the word now, but I remember that being sort of the soundtrack to my childhood, so I always looked for that in music, and I think it imprinted itself on me in a young age. But also, my kind of moment when I decided to make my own music was way less cool, I guess. I was listening to a song by a band called The Horrors, and they're from the UK.
They're good.
They're great. I love them. But it's
we have the same taste in music, guys.
Yeah. but I remember hearing this song. I think it was called Strawberry Fields, and I remember being really confused about what this riff was, whether it was a keyboard or a guitar. And that, I think, because I never was into guitars before that. I was I played cello and my orchestra, but after that I was I need to know what pedals are, and I need to know, that sort of opened everything up for me. I was I need to know the science of sound, I need to know how, engineers make, spaces that sound acoustically incredible. That opened a whole new world.
It is a pretty dope riff, I will say.
Oh yeah. it's maybe backwards or something. It's very My Bloody Valentine, but
which is another fantastic band.
Yeah,
The grunge, cool shoegaze era.
Yeah, I mean, it's all good music. I think, there's so much good music to lap up, but that was, what really did it for me, and I remember going to, my physics teacher and being like, do you teach, anything about, the physics of sound? And he's like, actually, I'm just geography. I studied geography, but I'm just teaching physics at the high school, and so I, really sort of, delved into it on my own and, looked at blogs and forums, and then met Roger and asked him to give me Ableton Live and all this software, and so I kind of got into the recording DAW world through that experience specifically.
So you really utilized the internet to the best of your ability, but also networked in a way that was unexpectedly a good thing, because you met probably the love of your life.
Absolutely.
In that.
We wouldn't stop talking on the internet.
Exactly.
Well, and it's interesting, we're from different generations, so I'm from before the internet, so.
Yeah, your day-to-day early on was a day without the internet,
The way I learned to play guitar.
Having to really scrounge for music.
I got to go on a class trip to France, and I spent my time in the Louvre looking at the huge Virgin Megastore, because I found import CDs that we couldn't get here. You had to buy CDs way before Napster. And so
FYE, Sam Goody.
The way I learned guitar was I would play these tracks for my dad, and he would break them down and show me the chords, and he'd be like, what the hell is this shit? And then when I flipped him Nirvana Bleach, and he was like, man, this is amazing, and there's also Beatles influence in here. And so it really wrapped that whole thing up and brought us really close together. Yeah. And he'll deadpan look at me sometime and be like, hey, wait, I got a new complaint. Which is different note.
When was this? Was this in the 90s during the grunge heyday? Yeah. Was this later on?
Yes,
right around this early mid 90s,
that shit was new.
So it was what today was bringing to fruition in mainstream music.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I remember when hip hop was born, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, the Beastie Boys came out with their first record, and we all went crazy because we were all New Yorkers, and we're like, oh, man, this is, like, nerds can rap too? Really? All right, cool.
Yeah. What do you think got you the ability to write such good riffs? And then going into riffs, how are you able to choose your vocal melody when you do write a song? And when you first wrote, how did that develop?
And we're talking specifically about Roger's solo music at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Like 10-minute turns the stuff that you've done, like, when you first started, how were you able to develop your skill? Like, what did it take?
I think a lot of people have the same thing where they start by chaining tape players together.
Yeah.
Eno started that way. I know Sebado started that way.
I think Grimes even did
that. I love Sebado.
Yeah. Well, Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah, same idea, yeah.
So, as a, you know, garage band, not the software garage band, an actual garage band kid, you start by learning these people's songs and by playing them in front of your friends and realizing that you are awful. Right? Like, I gave her, as a show of love, I gave her all of my old songs I've ever recorded, ever.
Humiliating. And I just humiliated him by playing it on my college radio station when I was the DJ. He had like one.
Where'd you
band,
go to college?
Sarah Lawrence.
Where is, oh, is that in New York?
Yeah, it's a Bronxville area, like Yonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very feminist college.
When did you guys end up moving here?
He moved here like ages ago. I moved here about 2 years ago.
Okay.
I'm 5 or 6 years deep, but it feels...
I'm 8 months deep.
Really?
Welcome
to Transplant City. Here's Austin. Everybody just moved here.
It feels like a lifetime. No, it's a rad place to live. Mm-hmm. I could go on about that forever.
So for you, it was getting a knowledge of how to cover.
Well,
using maybe some of fragments of ideas, maybe thoughts that were just completely insane, but somehow you're able to find a certain meter to apply that to.
In a way, you have to do all this prep work. Like, you have to read 1,000 books before you can write one short story, let's say. So you learn a bunch of songs, you play them terribly, but eventually, I always tell bands to write 100 songs, and they always look at me like I'm an asshole, and then I quit. But it's real in that you've got to put in those hours, and if you do, I believe I've done that.
1,000 hours.
I think I've produced 50 records of, you know, collaborative stuff with people. Maybe more. And after you really start, just throw yourself in. It becomes second nature, but it's like you have to do all this prep. Just like you lift weights for a super long time, and then you can pick up a car.
I like the story of when you were working at the theater barn and you didn't want to wake anybody up, so you learned how to play guitar super quietly in a specific kind of
way. I sort of invented this super quite quiet folk style that's only fingers, and I almost never play with a pick now because it's just more shit to lose.
Yeah.
But the quiet style informed my songwriting and sort of became a whole niche.
Yeah.
Instead of... And, you know, I broke a lot less strings. Very practical.
I was before we had actually got, I had driven, thank you to Roger in Jamaica for actually letting me house myself for the episode at their actual apartment.
Well,
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I remember texting you earlier today and saying, hey, your stuff reminds me of, like, Elliot Smith mixed with some excellent synthesizer sounds, because he whispered.
Oh,
like, have you listened to his music?
Oh, I love it.
I can tell that has informed your style in a way. There's a certain delicacy to your lyrics. What influences drove you to write the songs? You know, let's pick out a record of yours. Last what's it called? Something songs.
Oh, those small songs.
Small songs. Yeah. I almost said last songs.
Last songs.
Small songs. Like what are your main, like, what do you like to write about?
Wow. I love the fact that writing can be creative writing, and it doesn't have to be, I went down to the dock today. You know, it doesn't have to be first person. So I love early Beatles. Like, yeah, their 2 minute songs to me are the most delicious,
yeah,
cake.
The one that just starts, please don't wear red tonight. Yeah. And then they go on to explain why.
Yeah.
Pause for a second.
Meanwhile, Nickelback makes millions of dollars. You're telling the exact thing of what's going on. I never did this. I never did that.
It's very specific.
Yeah, it's like very specific. I took a photograph.
It's worth it for the memes, though. Have you seen
look at this draft.
Like, people have edited that to be like, look at this graph. And it's a guy holding up a bar
look
graph.
Look at this ass.
That's worth it. Writing songs. Let's get back in it. Repeat your question about songs.
So, like, what do you like to write about, and what do you feel like has influenced your lyrics and potentially your songwriting altogether?
It's just this wild ass meditation, because I will go into a zone of nothingness and listen to a song on repeat for 20 times. And then the classic thing that Eno and Talking Heads would do is just vowelize. If you listen to their earliest stuff, iZimbra is just them. It's just gibberish.
Yeah.
So I would just do that same old thing where you just think and feel, and you start mouthing
syllables.
Yeah, you start mouthing gibberish, and eventually a line will come out and it'll be somehow English, but also quasi meaningful. So it's automatic writing. It's a lot of automatic writing. There's definitely some songs where I'm like, this happened to me and it's embarrassing. A lot of that shit comes from, like, sadness.
Yeah.
I always liken it to taking a shit, because emotionally you just go, get it out.
But
I haven't written a song in a real long time because I've been so happy and so busy as an artist.
Isn't that the ironic thing? It's like, when you're the most depressed, you are probably the most creative.
You're also meditating on, like, what's going wrong in your life. You're like, what is it?
Exactly.
Like, what is happening? You're, like, chipping away at that part of yourself.
And, like, when you actually write a song automatically, like you said, you're finding your groove. You're finding your groove within the riff you're playing. So it's probably easier to sound out the vowels.
I was going to say, there's also probably a reason why there's so many, like, songs about sadness and songs about love, like,
bingo,
more than any other thing.
Right.
Like, I'd say, like, most inspired in, like, those two mental states to write lyrics.
I have this great memory of writing the lyrics to this goofy song called Sad Animals that was our, like, regional hit. In the Brooklyn trash rock scene.
What company? I mean, oh my God.
Apple.
I'm so used to working
iTunes.
What band?
Spotify.
Jesus.
I'm getting you another beer.
he's going to his fridge and he's getting me another beer.
10 minute turns. I'll answer.
Oh, I said what company? I've been in the corporate world for too long.
Which
I actually am a recruiter, if you guys didn't know. So I make cold calls every day. So you have to like the sound of your voice. Probably the reason why I'm doing a podcast.
You've got a nice, loud, resonant voice.
Very booming.
Anyway, I have this great memory of, I didn't know how to sing. Like, I'm a total self-taught geek, so I was on my knees on an astroturfed basement that we had in Brooklyn, desperately wanting to do a good job into this SM58. Smoked like a tiny roach, and then had to get in a train and go back to New York. So I'm just like a little bit weird, and I just banged these goofy ass lyrics out where I'm talking about the, like, Jehovah's Witnesses and tiny tiny animals and Chase
Manhattan.
You're
the best subject.
Well,
you really can sometimes.
I it was just a complete goofy free association, but yeah. I wanted just to leave the song for my friend to find when he got home from work and be like, wow, that's cool. And I managed to pull it off, and it was fun.
Yeah, free association is really fun. In college, I wrote an EP.
What's free association?
Oh, it's like where you're like writing off the old dome, you know, where you're just
words out of random?
Well, kind of random.
Pulling it out of your ass.
Yeah, it's like a Rorschach test of words, where like one word makes you think of another word, makes you think of another word, like that.
So if I were to say shirts, someone may think socks. Yeah, exactly. Well, and then shirt, from socks, where I may mean shoes.
Corporate America, okay. Capitalism.
There H&M, we go.
Yeah, yeah. Literally just going.
So rule of association.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just sort of like letting your mind write like uninhibited.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's for me when I write, I have to find out early on what's this is going to be about. And this is after that vowel process, because I do the same thing about when I'm writing lyrics, I can't write like the lyric first. I have to figure out the vocal melody. Or do you guys do that too? You're not even thinking about the words. It's the sound. It's the ah.
Sorry, I was going to say, it really depends on the project. So like what we're doing right now with Paint Shop Girls is all like in the moment. It's very much 100% like we're jamming and improv lyrics and melody and everything. So that happens like basically all at once. Or in like a very short sequence of time. I wrote an EP in college that was based off of a class on feminism and gender studies, and I basically took all of the things that I read for that class and free associated, like, after, you know, because you have to like write essays and you know your thoughts on whatever you read or you know stuff like that. So I basically took chunks of that and edited it together. And because it was a very interesting and poetic class, like, I got, like, some really great lyrics out of
that. I thought it was incredibly rad, and I added some Vangelis synthesizer on it, but almost did nothing and just helped her mix it and was like, this is some really good shit, and I can't wait for her to do that again.
Yeah. It was really fun, honestly. It was, like, my first experience with Ableton, too, and I found this really rad feature on it called Audio to MIDI, and all I had in college was, like, a really shitty bass. I don't even think, like, I had a synth at that point. So I just had a really, I did have one synth, but, anyway, I had the shitty bass that I, like, played, I tried to, like, play these notes on and everything.
Let me guess, high action, where you had, it was hard to press down on?
it was actually more of, like, I was in a dorm with a bunch of screaming ladies, and, like, there was no way of recording, like, in the space that I had, so I basically just MIDI'd it in and changed the notes around and then put, like, a piano plug-in on it. And added, like, just did this really crazy, like, molding, like, it's like making a clay pot or something out of, like, this raw material. And then I took the lyrics that I made from, like, the books that I read. Like, and that's kind of, like, where a concept album kind of... So I think there's, like, the free association is one technique. There's improvisation, which is, you know, free association, but unfiltered. And then there's just, you know, a concept album where it's, like, you're taking... you know, stuff from a very specific source, like you were saying. You do all this research kind of beforehand on what you want to write about, and you pull that all together and you write your own thoughts about it and edit yourself and, you know, make lyrics that way. I think he does a very, I don't know, your process for what you did solo / with 10-minute turns was a little bit different. I think that you have, like, much more of a, like, kind of a great storytelling. Like, you create these, like, great characters, like this lonely cowboy and stuff like that. Like, tell the story about when you did the country song.
There's a million ways to write, and it's all valid. And, you know, all I can say is write 100 songs, and you'll experience all of them. But I don't know, at some point I was driving home from work, and I had a car with only a radio in it, and it only got the hip-hop station or the country station. Upstate New York in the country.
Which is not what you know mainstream America expects out of New York, but
New York,
it's the same thing with Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
I was originally
from
Philly.
It's very redneck.
People in Pennsylvania call it Pennsyltucky once you get outside of Philly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably similar in New York.
Yeah,
sure. So
yeah, absolutely. So I think the first actual song I ever wrote with like lyrics and melody I did a lot of experimental music.
Yeah.
Just trying to, you know, bang shit around. But I heard this country song, and I was going home, and I was pretty close to my... I lived in a barn at the time. And I was like, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
You lived in a barn?
It was rad.
Okay.
Barn, not a bar. It was a
bit, no, I know. I've
heard a bit of both. Okay.
Barn.
Well, I heard this track, and I was like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I can do this. And it was really interesting. I wrote a country song. It's in G, like a good country song should be.
Yeah.
And immediately my relationship with my dad improved because he is also a bluegrass musician. And like he all, it's like, it was crazy. I was maybe 20, 21 at the time.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, we get each other now. Cause I was making all this experimental music.
Yeah.
And like he would walk into my bedroom. I live with my folks. Be like, this sounds like the soundtrack to my nervous breakdown. You know, meaning it like both tongue in cheek, but yeah.
Also turn it off.
Also, please. What the fuck are you making? And I, you know, I can play that track for you. It pretty much does.
No, yeah. But I love that song though because it's like you interpreted like I feel like so many country songs are very cliche, like you
for
know,
sure, yeah.
Like my dog Church died, my woman left me, and my car broke down all the same day or something like that. But I don't know, you have such a way with words in terms of like weaving them into this really, like there's this one lyric that always like gets me choked up every time I hear it, which is who'd want to sleep in a box while you're alive? And that just like, I don't know, it's poetry. It's really,
it is,
you're
yeah.
a poet. I mean, sorry, I'm like being so fangirly, but.
What I like,
thank you. I'm being so fangirly.
I know, I appreciate it.
No, it's really beautiful.
I like that a song can be complete essentially creative BS, you just freestyling, mm-hmm. but also you just squeeze that one drop of heart juice into it, that one line that's like actually really telling from, and it's so coded and messed up, you don't even know where it's from or what it means.
Well, yeah, it's like,
right, yeah,
it's not
yeah.
surface, like if you can like really hit the artery of like how to condense like these big feelings into like one phrase, then you get that pow, you know, like that.
Right, exactly. You know, yeah, yeah.
That's really
it. Almost paraphrases that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that's like very visual, but also very speaks to the human condition.
Yeah.
Like very, almost like very like Shakespearean in that way. It's like speaks to everyone in that regard, like death, love, sadness, you know, addiction, like all of these different things that like, you know, a lot of people, everybody basically experiences at some point in their life. You know, that's very compelling, even if you're doing it in like a tongue-in-cheek way or in like kind of a goofy, joking way, it can still be really powerful.
To be fair, I've made a lot of bad songs.
I think you have to.
I'm proud of
those bad songs inform your good songs.
They
really do.
I've
written a shitter of a song. I mean, I probably in my lifetime have written at least 90 plus songs, and probably more than half have been shitters, like just crap, pieces of shit. And but you know, there's like, for me, it's like 4 or 5, maybe 10 songs at the most, I'm like really like, I'm proud of. But like, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'm so glad I did that.
I love the ones that you're like, you're trying to do some experimental shit. Like, what if I rapped on a Casio beat? And and you do that and you're like,
I'm not a good rapper.
You should do that voice into a vocoder.
Hey, what if, I got it right over there.
You have at some point.
I got it right over there.
That would sound bizarre.
It's funny though, because it's like, I feel like with the Paint Shop Girls stuff, like,
and that's your collaboration.
Yeah, that's
effort.
What we're working on.
That's cool.
Mostly right now. We also have like another project, Shampoo, which is much more like collaborative and
based
with real instruments as opposed to all the synths in our living room and like our own sort of like J-Hop.
Let me break it down thusly. Paint Shop Girls is complete freestyle in our home studio, and we once brought this entire home studio into an art gallery and tried to play for 24 hours straight.
Yeah, we got into 21 hours.
Yeah, that's a story. That's a whole other story. But
that was crazy.
I don't recommend it.
I got bit by a dog before we actually got there, so it was madness.
It was a great gig.
Yeah.
And Shampoo started out as a guitar smuggling band in Brazil. So I would go down there. I probably shouldn't say that on air. Shampoo started out as a collaboration with my friends in Brazil, and it was an excuse to go down there. So I like the name. It's Shampoo with a CH, and it I just like the nonsense of it.
Like that's TSA approved.
I'm looking around at your guys' apartment, and I see a Polaroid. Are you guys Polaroid takers? Because I also am a Polaroid taker, too.
I think I had one at one point.
She got rid of it.
I did.
No.
I actually sold it because I was so poor at one point.
Oh, man.
It also had, like, a weird, like, I bought it with this weird, like, spot on the lens. So, basically, every time I would take a photo, it was sort of, like, fingers crossed. And hope that you get a good shot.
Ghost vision.
I like literally couldn't see anything.
Introducing the first ever Polaroid camera with ghost vision. No, I'm just kidding.
No way of seeing what you're taking a photo of.
You have no idea what you're taking a photo of, but it's the ghost of Kurt Cobain or something like that. I don't know.
I was gonna say though, like we were talking about terrible songs and writing bad songs and stuff like that. And I feel like our Paint Shop Girls project has been a real exercise in determining what a bad song is, because we're working very much not within like a traditional song structure. Like there's no like sitting down, writing chords, like, you know, and like really hammering it out. It's all sort of like, is that a cool loop? Like, I don't know. Like that's a bizarre loop. That's a funny loop. Like whatever's being said in this weird chunk of audio is hilarious.
We did edit a year's worth of jamming down to one mixtape.
Yeah.
Which we'll give you before we leave, so you can enjoy.
If you have a tape.
I actually was moved by the music that you guys sent me. I'm not even kidding. Like, it's rare where someone sends you a link and you're like, wow, that's impressive, because there's a lot of crap out there. Mm-hmm. Let's just be honest. There's a lot of crap. And you guys, you know, the stuff I've heard from you is really good. I listen to, it's called the Pet Shop.
Paint Shop Girls.
Yeah. It's a joke about the Pet Shop Boys, to be fair.
Okay. I was about to say, I almost said Pet Shop Boys for a second. I was like, please correct me.
I think I know.
No, but like, first of all, how do you know when a song's finished? Mm-hmm. And then how do you know when you've reached the point of no return? And it's like, this isn't going to get...
This is that part of the project that has really been bizarre to figure out, honestly. So what we've done so far in terms of like having a whole process, like an assembly line kind of thing, we do the jam. So the first mixtape that we put out was just doing the jam and then editing chunks, like the best chunks of it. So it has this very like crazy transitional like quality, I guess, to it.
I imagine it's a soundtrack to a Japanese game show, because it's just constantly like out of left field.
It's almost like sound bits or something.
Are you looping? Are you sampling like certain bits?
So much crazy shit. No, so basically the only post editing, like everything's live except for the post editing process, is strictly cutting chunks out and moving them together. So it's like taking, it's like collage in a way. It's a musical collage where you're taking the raw material and cutting it down and moving it around. And that's the only way I can describe it. What we've recently been doing since that mixtape has been released, has been doing like a little bit more post editing. So like, you know, putting, you know, like a side chain on it or something, or putting different effects on certain pieces or something like that. Meanwhile, we've also been just getting more into using Ableton for the tool that it is, in terms of like exploring the session view as well as the live view, or the other way around.
Do you know how people in interviews always say, well, you know, we really use the studio as an instrument? I was always sort of like, well, yeah, of course, but what we've built in our living room is this interconnected web of things that are all talking to each other.
Yeah.
So I can trigger the vocoder with the drums. I trigger the synthesizer with the drum machine. I would love to give you a run through. Right now.
When I found out that Octopus Project was a band, I was like, damn, that's exactly what we're doing, like in our studio. Totally, like, why they call themselves that.
Or you can get tangled up and lost in this.
Yeah, it's like everything is sort of like the brain is the focus, right, with the laptop over there, and we've got Ableton running, and we have our own template and everything that we set up for the whole studio space. And then we have some V drums over here. We have some modular stuff. We call this the Juno Station. So there's a Juno over here and a sequencer, and like a friend made this soft pop. It's a Bastille Instruments synth. We have a TC Helicon vocal pedal right there, and then a mic, and you know, Korg Mini, and lots of weird shit, arpeggiator. We have Drumland over here. And another modular spot, and then MS-20. It's just a lot of shit going on, basically.
I think you'll probably post a picture.
Yeah, I better.
Basically,
it's an impressive setup, guys. I walked in here and I'm like, wait a minute, you have a freaking, like, what's it called? Not a modular synth. Is that a modular synth? Yeah, it's two modular synths.
So
here we go.
What I wanted to do, I wanted to make a his and hers station. It actually started with this crappy 90s delay pedal, this Ibanez DE7. A friend gave it to me from my last band, and it was the most musical sound I ever heard. When you
what was the band
up.
Called?
That's a tough one.
did it change names?
No, no. I'm just kidding. I moved down here to tour with a fancy band. His name is Walker Lukens. He's a fancy man. We recorded with Jim from Spoon, and, you know, he's kind of like a big...
So you know Spoon?
Yeah. Well, I know Jim. After I quit, they got to open for Spoon. I just hung out with them all the time. It was a joy to record. Jim has a home studio that is it's the most beautiful home studio you can imagine. It's sort of in his garage.
It's like a skylight. It's really great.
Oh, it's wild. Anyway, so that guitar player in that band gave me this pedal. The pedal feedback so good
that
I was like, hey, what would a synth sound like through this? What would it sound like with two of them? What would it sound like with three of them? And then it was sort of, what if his and hers, like, we do everything together, our art and music.
Yeah.
So what if I could set up a his and hers environment? And then what if we could just grow that and grow that and grow that until it became our whole living room?
Yeah, the Ibanez is really fun because it's so messy, and like basically you set the delay on it and it'll just keep going and getting dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. So in a way that's sort of like, it's almost like a human element in terms of like the weird error that it creates in itself. So it's not like, you can't really determine what it's going to sound like when you run shit through it. So yeah, that's a fun little kind of aspect of our studio that's everywhere.
And I even got a picture from him, from Roger. And I mean, I looked at it and I didn't take a double take, but when I got here, the amount of equipment in this room, I mean, it is insane. Well, it's freaking amazing. Like, this is my recording dreamland. Thank you. He has a 4-track recorder. That's a cassette 4-track.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you guys ever heard of Guided by Voices, they made, like,
God bless,
albums in their basement, like B-1000 or Propeller.
Yeah.
When you create something so do-it-yourself, it empowers you, but not only empowers you, but it informs the sound that you're aiming for. Mm. How do you know what texture you're going to be looking for in each track? Because some of the stuff I've heard is very produced. And then some of the stuff I've heard from you guys, both, has been mid-fi. So where has that usually been informed? Are you using Pro Tools? How are you plugging that into Pro Tools, or what are you doing?
Currently, that's just set up as a playback thing. So
yeah, I have a bunch of tapes over there.
Okay.
I played Vivaldi through it at one point and sampled that.
But the crazy thing, we got a piano over there with a tape player attached to it. So you record a loop on the piano, take it across the room to the 4-track, and then remix that in a freestyle.
And you get the dirty tape sound, which is really the aspect that you're
I love that tape hiss.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's
really
so
great.
Weird. It's so
like,
weird.
There's like plugins that do that, but it's like, it's fun to be able to fuck with.
And it doesn't, the plugins are terrible.
Yeah.
For tape hiss.
There's like one though.
You have to buy the good ones.
There's one specific one.
Here's the crazy thing. I didn't know that four tracks existed until I got to college, and my freshman year roommate, who was just here the other day, 20 years later, he had a four track, and it literally changed my world. We didn't have like really catalogs of cool shit. There was no internet.
Yeah.
So I discovered,
like, what does Tame Impala use?
I discovered the four track in 1996, and it blew my whole mind. And I think that's my first four track still.
Wow.
Those things are built to last.
Another artist who used four track is Sabado. Hmm. Their early stuff,
for sure,
was almost fully
my,
maybe Centrodale too.
My that's
same guy.
That's my biggest. Influence that made me start recording
from the lo-fi movement,
and later on, like 15 years later in Brooklyn, I got to work with Jason Lowenstein.
So
at one point in my life, he's giving me a ride home in his wife's beat up Beamer, and I'm just like, how did this happen? I would love to get into the insane arc of my bizarre career, but it would take too long at this point.
Jeopardy question: which member of Sabado has a pet pig?
I'm gonna be like, Alex Trebek, please survive cancer.
The answer is who is Jason Lowenstein, and he walks that pig around Brooklyn and people go crazy.
I had dinner with Lou Barlou once. Sorry. Barlow.
I like Lou Barlow.
Sounds similar.
We should email him. Excuse me.
We would like to pronounce
your name now. How was your dinner with Lou?
It was good. Like, I had to pay. It was one of those house shows that he did.
Wow.
I used to live in Houston at the time, and I saw something on Eventbrite. It was like, Meet Lou.
Hey,
introducing a meet and greet with no.
Get
anyway,
money, Lou.
Yeah. So we got to meet him for dinner with like 10 other people. It cost like $100. And on top of that, the drummer from Dinosaur Jr. was there, Murph.
Yeah.
So it was cool talking to Murph because he actually talked more than Lou. But like during like the interviews, it's always like focused on like Lou and Jay.
Yeah.
Jay's like, hey, how's it going? Like he always sounds like completely baked out of his mind. Like, and then Lou like just keeps going on during the interviews. But I've never heard Murph like talk that much. He's actually a sweet guy. But like during my time, Lou was like talking about all these like old stories where Jay would play the guitar so freaking loud that they forgot to bring earplugs
really
and stuff like
loud,
that.
Loud to be fair, like
absolutely.
Levitation or whatever. We were walking by and we're like, "Damn, like we can like this is where
I had to move back like a few in
this
like
my ear comfort zone like
just
down
like,
the street."
Yeah, I saw Waves about if you ever heard of that band 6 years ago, like 2012 maybe. 2013, I can't remember what year it was, but I had this very terrible experience because we were at Fitzgerald's, which is a classic club in Houston that Nirvana's played at.
I played there.
This guy's played at it. But the one downside of it is the downstairs has terrible acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the right system and you don't have the right guy doing the sound, you're going to destroy someone's ears. And that's exactly what happened to mine. I have permanent hearing loss from one of the speakers that the Waves were playing out of. Like, there's like two major speakers there.
Yeah.
You know, the music was coming out of because they mic'd the drums and stuff like that.
Damn, that's a shame.
Yeah, it sucks.
Wear earplugs.
Fiddler opened for them.
Yeah.
Wear earplugs. Do it. Wear them all the time.
That made me think of a... I don't remember.
PSA.
Where.
I think you're into music.
I read this in like a 33 by one third, one of those books.
That's a cool book.
Yeah, sorry. No,
they did have one for dinosaurs. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. So, I read one about My Bloody Valentine and how they like would make people faint at their show. Like that was their goal.
My buddy Fred woke up in the morning with blood on his pillow after a My Bloody Valentine show. No joke. Those guys
straight
are
up.
Crazy.
Yeah. Two bags.
Yeah, man.
So, definitely wear earplugs. Austin does a really cool thing where they will actually give musicians custom earplugs.
Which is freaking awesome.
Haam.com. HAAM. They are amazing. Health Alliance for Awesome Musicians.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Fuck yeah.
I think that Austin, it's the best hotbed for creativity. Mm. There's just so much creativity. So many people wanting to create.
Also, people are so supportive here. Like, I think that's a really big part of it. And, like, not in, like, a coddle me kind of way, even though it can get like that. But I think that the fact that institutions that have money, such as Ham, like, there, people are... Austin is actually, as a city, trying to create, like, a habitat where artists and musicians can exist and not be totally fucked over.
I think the one thing that is potentially risky in Austin is the amount of gentrification in really fantastic neighborhoods of art. Mm-hmm. And in a way, you almost have to, like... From a political perspective, to limit the amount of gentrification. Like, I understand a little bit, like, you know, redoing, you know, something needs to be redone. Like, these floors of this apartment need to be redone probably once every 10 years, maybe once every few years. I believe the same thing exists when it comes to construction. Maybe it's okay to redo things.
Being
but
from New York, it's
within
like
balance.
This is a palace compared to the conditions that people live in the
Bingo.
City. But I will say, though, like, it's like playing with a snake, you know? It's like you know that these large corporations are both helping and harming the landscape in terms of, like, they want to... When they're at their best, they're giving back to the community. When they're at their worst, they are taking over the space and claiming it as their own, forcing people out.
I will say this. I think that it is, like, trying to stop the tide. It's... The big money of gentrification is as serious as the ocean, and I don't think anyone's ever going to necessarily legislate against it.
You can't, or else you're considered a socialist. You're right.
I mean, which, wrong. I think, like, all musicians are socialists in a way.
Absolutely. Like a utopian view of the world, but I think at the same time,
I wouldn't say all. Because I've met some musicians who I very much disagree with. Yeah, I'm a social democrat.
Like,
that's for sure.
Corporate butthole eaters.
Yeah. Corporate butthole eaters.
No, but, like, I think that, again, like, out of all, I mean, and regardless, like, I've only lived in, like, two places in my life, being Texas and New York. But I think the big difference that I see is the fact that, like, the space is really being created for, like, the you know, the young people here, especially those coming out of UT, like, they want, like, they have the business savvy. You know, like, people who study at UT, I think, compared to a lot of the, like, for instance, like, when I left Sarah Lawrence, it seemed very idealistic, and, like, everybody sort of, like, learned their art form.
Sarah Lawrence,
and, like,
this is a college?
Went to college.
Okay, I thought this was, like... someone's as a person, like, who's Sarah Lawrence? Like,
when I graduated from Joey Costello.
When I graduated Joey.
It's Joey University. We like to make salami here. I'm done.
It's a trade school. I think a lot of the art sort, like, the liberal arts or, you know, arty schools that, like, you know, I graduated from, my family members graduated from, there's big issue of, like, teaching people the craft of making the thing that they, you know, like, the art or the music or whatever it is, but not the practical application of going out into the world and making a living doing that thing. And I think the thing that I see from a lot of UT graduates is that they get this education in how to make a business and run a business, which is really important, so then they can therefore compete in a world that is being overrun by this, you know, corporate monster that's just, like, taking over everything.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, musicians being like, oh, well, duh, I don't know how to, like, you know, do business or anything, and, like, getting fucked over. Like, that's not an excuse anymore. Like, you can educate yourself. And I think that, like, the thing I love about Austin is the people here are very business-oriented, and they're wanting to take control and make a better future for themselves. You know, they take their
ideas. It's an entrepreneur hotbed.
Yeah.
I mean... And you almost have to consider, you definitely have to consider musicians their own entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
In a way, because you are running your own business if you are an artist, because you got
to
survive somehow.
You
got to make some money.
To run your own business, absolutely. If you want to be a musician, you have to, like, gone are the days of just having one person represent you and just being like, oh, you take care of all of it. Like, because then they'll just fuck you over. So, like, why would you want to do that anyway?
I think Austin is a good tech hub, but it's also a great entrepreneur hub. And absolutely. That comes from, you know, music as much as art, as much as actual companies, which I am as liberal as can be when it comes to companies. So I can't stand the amount of control that they have, you know, in politics and in mm-hmm. the world today. It's absurd.
The main represented force in this Bingo. Country, like they're at the forefront of all the policy that's being made. So I don't know. Like, I think it's about time that like artists and people who are creative also like make the study of running a business creative. Like, it can be like you're basically world building. Like, you can create your own world if you so choose to, but you have to be smart about it and not just get caught up in like, you know, I'm an artist, so I couldn't possibly handle money. Like, money's dirty. Like, you have to get over that shit.
Are you guys metrics watchers?
Metrics.
So when it comes to like social media and like Spotify and like, no. Ooh, 70 listens.
Not at like, all. I'd actually like, I'm going to eat my own words now. I'd probably be better off with the music that we'd do if I was more into that. But like,
my mom's a metrics watcher. Ooh, 70 listens. But
the thing is right now, like, I think our music, like music for us has been more of like this joyous hobby. Like, we've decided that this is going to be a hobby that we take as far as we can in terms of that, but like for our work and for like, you know, like work is art, like painting
for sure
is
work.
Yeah, I feel like I've dodged a huge bullet. I've gotten out of professional producing and I do painting full-time, which has
is this scenic painting?
Yeah, so I paint.
Okay.
We the theater that I work at, we have three stages and we are painting stuff constantly, so now I get to do music for fun, which it became. You can suck the fun out of anything. You work with enough really? Singer, songwriters, and
if you work with bad people,
or you, not even bad people,
negative but people like, who suck the energy out.
Not
of
Not even energy vampires. People that like I would get paid to do their record, and then they would not even bother to put it out. Like,
we're just gonna shelve this for
I
later.
I got bored. That happened a few times, and I worked my ass off on that record. Or like, you know, and then they, oh man.
Well, yeah, and for a producer, it's like you rely on like obviously the money up front, but also the networking aspect of putting out the album and getting, you know, work from that. And so like that is definitely taking away half of your income.
It got really tough after a point.
You've put out in,
But in so them. Now to do music is just a joy, and mm-hmm. I only work with people that are fun.
Yeah,
and it's great.
And we basically decided to like take like whatever money we make, you know, from whatever gig or whatever, and put it back into the music. Like, that is sort of it's its own sort of economy of its own. Like, it can exist on its own, and that's cool. You know, like we paint. Like, we do like side hustle painting gigs together. Like, we'll do like a set. Like, we're actually working on TexArts, which is out in Lakeway. We just did their set for Elf. So we take that and like put that into Rent or whatever.
Elf the movie? Elf Power the band?
Elf the musical, I guess. The play Elf, or something.
There's a
I
musical
don't know.
Called
I don't
Elf.
Know
That's
if it's a
cool.
musical. It's whatever. It's a play.
Can we just say points that he just said Elf Power?
I have them on
that's
vinyl.
A band. Yes.
Pretty good.
Elf. That's Cat great. Power. No, not Elf Power.
Yes.
No, Elf Power is a band.
All the way, nothing here band. But empty space. All
right, we'll have to listen to after.
okay, wait. Jane sang a song.
Oh, that's a great song. Yeah. That is a good song. That was on a mixtape.
You have very good tone. He has good tone. It's not easy to get that.
Well, no, like, I'll
it's
say
a natural. It almost come. Does it come naturally? Did you have to train yourself?
I'm garbage.
but
check this out.
I like the sincerity.
So your singing thing is a tube, right?
Yeah.
And you have to just learn how to use your own tube. I wish I could sing.
It's like, an instrument to itself.
I wish I could
like
sing
a
like a girl.
Yeah.
I wish I could just the guy from Flaming Lips, too, Wayne. I read an interview with him 20 years ago. He was like, yeah, I just basically try to sing like a girl. And that blew my mind because he really does try it. And that's his whole persona. So you have to figure out how your pipes work. Like, I can do a pretty good, was it Death Cab for Cutie Dude?
I was gonna bring that up.
Really hard not to, actually. So you got to be careful of what you can slip into.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I noticed, actually.
You really do have to be careful. Sorry.
Sorry, it's okay. I noticed two songs that I made, like, early on in my making music.
Yeah.
Were like the same sort of progression and the same notes and the same vowels. It's like my A's, like the A vowel is really comfortable for me. So like that was sort of my go-to for a while. Like if I would just be like singing like a song and making up a song on the spot, it'd be this weird progression like da da da, man on man. Like that's a song that like I made, and like after that I made another song that sounded just like it without realizing it. So it's like there's a comfortable place that your voice wants to go based on like the resonance that feels good and sounds good and everything. And as you practice singing, you like work around those vowels and learn how to open your mouth properly and make the sounds that you want to make. So
the interesting thing is that once you start learning how to use it differently, you find other different pockets. Like I had a terrible chest cold one time in New York, but I wanted to sing backup on my friend's track, so I did it anyway, and I realized that I could do a pretty passable Howlin' Wolf / Captain Beefheart with a chest cold. So I was doing the volume was like, "How did I do this thing for you? How did I?"
The other, like last week, when I had a terrible cold, and you were like making me sing Macy Gray.
She lost her voice and does an amazing Macy Gray impersonation.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, he was like, do it. Like,
oh shit.
Yeah. Do it.
So we've mentioned a few different artists all throughout the podcast. Nirvana has come up, Dinosaur Jr., Lou Barlow.
Lewis
Barlow. It's like Barley.
My brother. He's like 5 years older than me, and he informed me about my music. So it's probably the reason why I got into so much music that we're all pretty much into. But he would pronounce it Lou Barlow.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, God damn it.
Like my life. So it ruined me.
You're ruined, yeah.
But if there's any similarity between Kurt and Lou, is that they write in very sarcastic ways. One man tells a story probably more when it comes to songwriting. I would say that's probably Lou. He definitely is more autobiographical, whereas Kurt is probably more sarcastic. Like, for instance, the lyrics, "I'm so happy because today I found my friends in my head." Like, that's fucking sarcastic as fuck. Do you use sarcasm in your songwriting?
You can buy Kurt Cobain's journal, and it's an amazing.
I've seen it, but I've never read it.
It's an amazing read. It's probably expensive. It's a thick book, and a friend of mine had it. And it's his lyrics. I can't get past the trauma anymore. He was a messed up dude with a.
You go ahead. Cut that out.
No, we're gonna keep that there.
Continue. Messed up, dude.
No, I mean, like, that's the end of my damn point, anyway.
I mean, I feel like I can read your mind, so I thought that was the end. Just as a runaway train. Sorry, I was gonna say that he wrote that song Polly about, like, serial killer. Like, from the point of view of a serial killer. And, like, a real person who is murdering women and the horrible things that, he would do. So I think that, like, again, going back to the songwriting point of, like, how do you write a song or whatever, like, there's so many different ways to write a song, and I think that Kurt Cobain was probably a very cynical person. And a
very cynical, yeah.
Very tortured.
You can hear it.
Person,
yeah, very tortured,
inside,
for sure.
So he gravitated towards, like, those...
And I'm cynical, too. Like...
Yeah, also, that's, like...
I've suffered from depression and anxiety, so I'm there with you on that. He's absolutely cynical.
Might also be like a northern thing.
There's right? In writing, there's a thing that I do sometimes that's sort of like, it's almost burn writing. Like I've got beef with LA, and I don't know if I'm a New Yorker
It's because you're in the
music industry.
I'm just kidding. Or I've had great times in LA. Nothing but great times, actually. But I did write a song called "I Don't Believe in LA," and it's just beef. So I'll beef write sometimes. You know, if there's someone that I'm like yeah. snarky with, I'll sort of roast them. But I've vague it out so that the person would never know. Not they would ever listen
it's
to the song.
Like, it's like
if they were potentially able to get to the link to the track that you wrote
it's
about
like
them.
Like a Kanye Byrne track or something.
Maybe with that like rap genre that's like, I'm better than you, and you know that they're calling out this one like specific person. Yeah. What's it called? It's like, I don't know, roast rap or whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it has a lot of fire behind it. Like, you know, it's an aggressive, like, focal point. Like, yeah. you know, whether you're singing about, you know, like a person who broke up with you, or this person who's, like, ripping your style off, or this person who's, you know, like, it's a focal point, right?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that anything that can motivate you to write is mm-hmm. probably a good thing. Because
yeah.
worst case, you write a bad song. Best case, you write a good song.
I think it's funny. It's funny with the whole, like again, like, going back to Paint Shop Girls, it's, like, sometimes we'll get snarky with each other, like, while we're jamming or something.
Yeah.
And, like, we'll, like, be, like, singing about something where I was, like, I don't know if anybody else would even know it, but, like, I'll, like, go back to, like, I'll listen to it and be, like, oh, like, you know, Roger said that because I was like this, or I said this because blah, blah, blah. And, like, because especially, like, in the beginning of us jamming together, like, I used to only make music by myself, so it was very like him dragging me out of my comfort zone to do this improv thing with just the two of us, like 2 years ago, you know, basically to like this same time. I think I like moved down here in like October or something like that. We were starting to build the studio together, and he'd just be like, no, let's jam, let's jam, let's jam. And I was like, oh, this is so uncomfortable, like I usually just meditate on a song and build it by myself, and I don't want anyone else to hear me.
And also, when it's by yourself, it's yours.
Yeah.
When it's with both of you,
or
with a band, it's theirs.
Yeah.
Jamming
in a way.
Jamming cheapens the process of improvising with you know, your closest friends in a way that there's no net, and you know that you're recording.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just jamming. It's like, it's a blues jam.
Like, well, there's amazing moments, for sure, because the ego is totally gone. You're not doing any reflecting or anything like that. But, yeah.
And that always helps and hurts music, ego.
I think it's both, yeah.
I think it's a negative and positive relationship.
I think that, like, really great songs have been made by people being like, I just want to be the best, you know, and then, like, you know, horrible songs have been made that way.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I think that what we're trying to do is more of, like, this great ego death of, like, it's almost like meditation in a way. You go in, you try and, like, make a song. So, I don't know, like, at one point you, like, asked how we, like, pick our tones and stuff like that, and I wanted to touch on that. And I think that, like, the way that it ends up unfolding is that one person makes a patch on the modular stuff, or you have like a reference tone or something, like,
yeah.
basically in its basic form you like have a reference tone, and then you free associate from there, you know, like this riff or whatever reminds me of like if I could do like this bass line over it. And, you know, I always liked, I took an electronic music class for a couple of years in college, and the SATB, soprano, alto, tenor, bass model always, like, or, like, I don't know, it's just, like, it's a obvious thing about music, like, you have a soprano, alto, tenor, bass line in classical music, and that kind of opened up how to compose for me, because it's like if you have like a line up here, then you have to have like a line down here to balance it out.
Yeah. So like when it comes to creating music, I think we all those creators out there probably have a similar experience. I mean, I've come across many similarities between, and I'm no good when it comes to being a musician. I'm no rock star. I'm just some guy who just fucking enjoys to fucking write something about whatever and make it sound like however I want it to be. But like when it comes to creating music, how do you make it fun? Like you mentioned when you are becoming, when it becomes a chore. You've mentioned before, like, hey, you love the fact that you're able to do this scenic art because now music is fun. What zaps the energy and what makes it fun?
He's definitely the person to ask about this because he's worked in the music.
You've toured too, right? You've done massive tours. Or
we could do a whole interview about my awful tour history. I'll just say that my first tour was opening for Alien Ant Farm.
Okay.
For a month.
Smooth Criminal. What band was this?
It was a band called Skeleton Key. They're incredible. Okay. They won a Grammy for album art. Now, that's a cool precursor for my whole, like, artsy-fartsy career, right?
Yeah. You wrote that. I mean, you did the artwork for the album?
Heck no. No.
Oh, I thought you... Okay.
I was just a fill-in. So, their band is drums, bass, guitar, and trash percussion. And I was a fill-in trash percussionist. And I was, like, 23 and had no idea what I was doing. I'm not even a drummer, even though I've been a drummer on tour and stuff. I just said, my motto has been, no gig too weird. Like, just say yes, say yes, say yes. And the next thing you know, you meet a guy at a party and you're on tour opening for Alien Ant Farm. And that shit was crazy. It was tough to hear that track every day for a month.
Yeah.
It'll drive you insane.
So it's having to hear shit that you don't want to hear every single day for a month that makes it a chore.
yeah, well, you know, again, if you're with the right people, in the right circumstances, I think touring can be great.
Yeah.
For me, it always made me a little sad. It was a little dissociative. You wake up in Ohio and you're like, where the heck am I? Where and when am I? It doesn't pay a lot unless you're famous. Even then, it still probably doesn't pay a lot.
I mean, so records don't sell anymore, too.
It's just tough across the board, and you know, I got to a point in my mid 30s where I was like, touring is making me miserable, and I feel like I'm so tempted to get on the forums and be like, give up your dreams, get a job, but like, it's having a full time art job has made me so incredibly happy compared to when I was a full time producer, freelancer, crazy musician, busy as hell, like getting paid by strangers to do cool music stuff. It was just so hard. And I don't know, I sound so shell-shocked, but I think I am.
Yeah, but you almost have to be careful because you got to be with good people, but you also got to be working with people you like. If you're able to make money in music, first of all, that's fucking awesome. I failed at that every single time. Like, I've never made money from a single track I've written.
Well, how long have you tried?
10 years.
That's about right.
I've given up every time.
Well, that's your problem.
Oh, for sure.
I think that I didn't even read this book, but I remember I'm a big fan of Audible, especially painting during the day. I saw this book recently and like read the little synopsis for it that was like Generation Burnout, and I've never read it, so I can't recommend it to anybody. But I thought the concept was really interesting because it's like the author talks to a bunch of different people in, you know, in contemporary society about their experience with burnout. And I think that a lot of people kind of go into these passions, whether it be like music or culinary arts or, you know,
painting. I mean, anything nowadays.
Anything.
Really.
And it's like, we live in a society where it's like, you know, your boss can hit you up on your phone at any time and be like, come in now. So like the
or shit can hit the fan at any time too.
Yeah, you could be an entrepreneur.
Because you have access to the information that it did hit.
Your website can shut down like at any time, and you have to deal with it. And it's like we have so many demands put on us as people, and as you know, both consumers or not really consumers, but
well, But
like I'm specifically talking about as people trying to make their way as you know making money. Yeah, making money in today's society. So. You know, like, I think I actually remember talking to a friend of mine recently who's, like, 26, and, like, he had this big break, and then his band broke up, and, like, he just, like, went through this whole thing of just, like, being burnt out, like, at age 26, and it, like, took him, like, what, like, 2 years or something like that in the music industry. So I think that, like, it's just the demands that are put on people, and, like, you know, I also think that, like, artists, to a degree, like, are, like, of... generally kind of like a fragile like sensibility. Like they're very like open and they experience things in a way like where it's like, you know, I mean, like even Wall Street businessmen, anybody can experience burnout and anybody can break down. And, you know, I think we've all, that,
if you're over the age of 22,
you've
experienced probably burnout.
The pace of life is so extreme. So it's like, you know, like I think that the beauty that like you're, that you've talked about with me at least is like the kind of like phoenix rising from the ashes of like you burn out on a thing and then you put it down for a while. Like you have to know when to like not keep pushing yourself to the degree where you can never ever go back to a thing again that you used to love. It's all about balance in life.
Yeah. Well, I think that self reinvention is just easier today than it's ever been. So I used to love like in, you know, first day of school in sixth grade, you're like, I'm gonna be a new person. I'll be a cool guy.
This I'm a punk.
I'm a wear
ribbons. Wait a minute, this is the year where I become popular.
Yeah.
Girls are gonna like me.
No, this is the time.
We're all still there. You know, if I want to delete a band camp and start a new band, start a new band tomorrow and delete all my other shit, hot make that shit private, and then I'm
archive.
Then I'm a country musician. Like if I want to be. So you don't have to obey like any laws. You can just keep doing. A lot of people just have 100 projects. Yeah.
I think that like we as a culture also like are much more accepting of, you know, different characters or whatever. The fact that like different, that people want to try on new characters and, you know, do the reinvention thing. I think we're more aware of the fact that people are more dynamic and might want to try different things.
Well, and in a nutshell, like, there's really no way of measuring success in music nowadays. I mean, record sales, they don't sell.
It's all about like what
tour sales
to focus on.
I guess that's the only metric now.
It's
we're all, whether you're a musician or an artist or anything like that, you have to go from your own playbook.
Okay, now
and your own way of going about it, because at the end of the day, everybody gets to success differently.
It's perceived value.
It's perceived value, absolutely.
So, you know, Bono has a lot of perceived value, but he also has a lot of money. So how does someone coming up get that perceived value? It's more than your follower count.
I don't listen to Bono.
But it's fair point. But they did also put their record on everyone's iPhone that time and tank.
Oh, and everybody hated that.
Yeah, I know.
It was the worst.
I'm gonna be unpopular here. There's a few songs I liked on that album.
It's fine, I didn't like
that they pushed it on it.
Again, but like it didn't go over well, I feel like, universally.
Let me say this thing. I feel like people shouldn't have to apologize for liking a song. Appreciating
such thing as guilty pleasure.
Appreciating a thing is like
it's valid.
It's just connecting to it. And the younger critical me, I'm embarrassed of him because he hated so many things.
Yeah.
Like now when I hear it, especially being a producer and a professional and a composer, you can pick out a dope thing in any piece of media, any painting.
We've been binge watching, and in terms of binge watching, I mean like the only thing we'll watch, even though we don't really watch stuff a lot, is like Humphrey Bogart movies, like The Maltese Falcon, and we just watched Casablanca yesterday. And we were just talking about, like, Roger was like, I like watched this once in like high school and thought it was so fucking stupid. And then like we're watching it yesterday and we're like, this is so beautiful. Like, this is amazing.
Casablanca is the best goddamn movie.
It's ever. It's a yeah. So like, you know, your tastes really do change as you like grow older or whatever.
It's the evolution. Yeah.
You know, and like it's growth and it's the fact that life has a lot to offer. I was going to say though, I do have a great book recommendation though.
Cool.
I'll say mine.
Okay.
Mine is this book called What If We're Wrong? And it's this really fascinating sort of like kind of thought study or whatever on like what things we'll remember in the future or like how the future will look based on like how things change, you know, for like the way we look at the past and the way the past actually worked. But it's really interesting. Like at one point the author is like, only either Elvis or Bob Dylan will be remembered as, like, the representation of rock and roll music. Because it'll either be, like, this raw, kind of folky, like, you know, kind of version, or it'll be this, like, glitzy, glamoury version of rock and roll, because, like, you know, the human history really distills things as you get further and further around the down the timeline. It really distills things into one, or the, like, you know.
It's really that dichotomy almost exists throughout time, like Nirvana versus Michael Jackson, glossy versus, you know, you know, like, fucking filth and but it's who, like, you the, fucking are.
The,
like,
further away from it we get, like, the less we think about it. Like, we think of, like, Alexander the Great or Napoleon. Yeah. We don't think of Napoleon and his rival, or, like, Alexander and his rival. You know, it's like it's one person, like, for each, you know, era or whatever. So it's a really interesting book.
So my book is by Flea. It's called Acid for the People. I mean, Acid for the Children. Sorry,
I didn't know.
Oh my god!
Had a book.
I actually he just wrote it.
I would definitely read it's not about Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I'm a decent fan from the, of their early stuff, and maybe some of their stuff from the 90s, like 80s, 90s from them.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff from the 1000s and later stuff, as they go along, they're definitely getting older out there. Yeah, but his experience throughout his childhood, it's so interesting to watch how his parents shaped him and how he was shaped by the people around him.
And he talks about racism in a really interesting way.
Yes, bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you may have
watched
the video.
Sampled it.
Yeah, I
like listened to a part of it, it's really crazy.
He's a good writer. Surprisingly, Flea is actually I don't think he did not use a ghostwriter. He used himself and I think an editor.
And it's very much like his philosophy kind of thing.
Yeah,
like
very
the way he thinks about it is very interesting. Like his sort of, like, you know, it's like not like empathizing with, like, you know, racists in the way where it's like, oh, like, you shouldn't, you know, tell them all.
Yeah, at the time was looking up to
he was
to,
more like, I
to
feel
that figure.
So sad that these people are being held back by their family's shitty dogma. It's really interesting, from what I've heard of it.
Cool. We're starting a book club.
No, we're just giving book
No, I like it. I'm going to do The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield.
The War of Art.
Wow. It's a really short originally self-published book, and he talks about the concept of resistance. When you're an artist and you're about to pick up your guitar and write a song, you experience all this mental distraction. It's very far out in terms he personifies the resistance that you feel when you're supposed to do the thing
that's
that you
dragon, right?
I don't know. Every writer, artist, musician, person should have that book in their pocket all the time.
That's a good point. So you guys plan any shows anytime soon?
We're terrified.
What are your plans?
So music's supposed to be fun for us, right?
Yeah.
So I booked this gig on the 21st, which is next week.
November.
21st. It's next week. And
at Whippin.
We've had all of
I love Whippin.
Well, come on
right,
down.
They have freaking amazing food. It's that Indian food place, right? Yeah.
We've had
I was there last weekend.
Want us to play an 85-minute set. That's a long... When your songs are 2 minutes long, that's a long set.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
And it's going to be Shampoo.
I'll be
specifically.
There.
It's a bunch. We're going to play so many songs.
I'm looking forward to it.
Come on down, man. Buy a beer.
Okay. And I encourage you, whoever is listening to this podcast, to come out to Whippin on the 21st. Is this Saturday or Friday?
I'm going to go with Thursday on that one.
Thursday, sorry. You're going to go with Thursday on that one. You're just guessing.
Anybody listening to this podcast, if you play music and you want to try to jam... Or you're into electronic music, or you play an instrument, definitely hit us up because we do a lot of collaborative work.
Are you guys available on social media?
We are.
Such as Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter?
Twitter. We don't tweet.
I twat.
I heard a lady on the radio, she was like, if you can follow us on Instagram, Spotify, beep, beep, meow, meow. She started just making weird noises on KUTX. So apparently follow us on
She dropped acid before.
That sounds great. Raptor. Yeah, so
Raptor Media.
Instagram, Paint Shop Girls, Roger Paul Mason. You're hard to
maybe
find.
Bay is my Instagram. But we also have an email address at paintshopgirlsband@gmail.com. Yeah, whatever way is easiest to hit
us up. So guys, I want to thank everyone for even listening to our podcast. I want to thank Roger in Jamaica for coming in today and even giving me the chance to ask them questions about their lives, about their creativity, and about what inspires them. At the end of the day, we're here for one reason, because our mom and dad, and they ended up giving birth to us. And music will give us a religion, a experience, if you let it. So I'm going to end this with one quote from Flea. Music gave me something that was not only good for me, it gave me something to work on, something to be proud of, and something that I really loved and have loved for, but also music was good for other people because it put joy into the world. I'm going to rest on that note and say thank you for listening. Have a great day.